Stallman, and a cavalcade of the entertainment world yesterday and today. This is Show Business. And in the spotlight, to start our series with the story of that great showman, Florence Ziegfeld, is your guide, historian, and host, Mr. Show Business himself, George Jessel.
I want to thank you very much for coming to our opening. For more years than I care to count, I've had the privilege of being in this wonderful blend of industry, emotion, ingenuity, and insanity called show business. I've done a bit of everything, from taking curtain calls on Broadway to playing split weeks in Iowa, from singing with slides in a little Nickelodeon in Harlem to my present capacity as a producer of pictures at 20th Century Fox. And I've had everything that the show business can give, from cheers to tears, from headaches to hits. Maybe I've worn more scars than Oscars. But listen, I wouldn't sell a minute of all these years for $1 million. Why? Well, now consider the wonderful things that show business has let me see. The backstage birth of unforgettable productions, the beginnings of great stars. Think what it's let me hear. Music. Lines, voices, some that are now only a lovely echo in the memory. And especially think of the people it's let me know. Wonderful creative artists, like the man whose memory we're saluting in our first show. The man who glorified the American girl, changed the world's concept of beauty, and presented the most lavish shows Broadway has ever seen, my dear friend, Florence Ziegfeld. And to help me tell the story of Ziegfeld, I have with me tonight a most gracious lady who knew him better than any of us. And here she is, Mrs. Florence Ziegfeld, Miss Billy Burke. Billy, it is both a pleasure and a privilege to have you here for this, our first show.
Oh, thank you, George.
However, I'd like to have an understanding on one thing. Our audience knows that in radio and pictures you've been tight lately. As one who is rather behind in the mind.
Oh, George, that's too cruel. Let's be more subtle. Let's say I'm just dead in the head.
Well, that is more delicate. But I was going to say, Billy, that what our listeners may not know is that offstage you're the owner of one of the better brains in show business. So tonight, for once, will you be your real self?
You mean stand up here without a single bee in my bonnet? Oh, George, I'd feel practically naked.
Well, you might as well get used to walking around with your wits showing, Billy. Because nobody's going to go on believing that you're lame in the brain after they've read that new book that you wrote with Catherine Shipp called With a Feather on My Nose.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, but isn't that a silly title, George? I always have to explain that my father was a clown in the circus, and balancing a feather on the nose is an old clown's trick.
Right. You got a feather from your father. Isn't that funny? All my father left me for my nose was a kerchief. That's all. But, Billy, your book is a wonderful autobiography and a beautiful picture of the golden age of Broadway. And what I especially liked about it, it's the first book that gives a true picture of Florence Ziegfeld.
That was one of the reasons for writing it, George. I felt that many people thought of Flo as, well, as one-sided, more concerned with the perfection of his shows than with the feelings of the people who helped produce them. I wanted them to see the Flo Ziegfeld I knew through 18 years of marriage. A man with many human failings, admittedly, but still filled with the warm human attributes of kindness and love and laughter.
Yes, there was a lot of laughter in Ziggy's life. Even the way he got into the show business was funny.
Yes, George, that was long before I knew him, but I've heard the story. Flo was only 24 then, and it was the year of the first Chicago World's Fair.
This is the year 1893, in the era of beards and bustles and buggy whips. And this is the midway of the Chicago World's Fair on a hot summer afternoon. Oh, crowds, crowds everywhere. Here to see the greatest marvels of the gay 90s and the newest sensations of show business. Over in this tent, a crowd is watching the dancer called Little Egypt as she goes through her astounding convolution. She's She's bringing down the wrath of the senses, but she's also bringing down the house. And here still is another crowd around one of the oldest attractions in the world.
All right, now, gents, all you gotta do is guess which shell the little pea is under, and I give you twice your money. All right, now, watch it, watch it. I place the little pea here. I cover it with the shell. Now I move this shell here. Then I move this one here, and I move this one over here. And now, where is the little pea?
Yes, crowds, crowds, crowds. But down at the end of the midway, there aren't any crowds at all. The big, beautiful building was planned for 1,000 people, but at the moment, there are only 2 inside. 2 men and trouble. Big trouble.
Dr. Ziegfeld, this is serious. The rest of the stockholders in this scheme of yours have been delegated me to come here and demand that something be done.
But what can I do, Mr. Scott? Haven't I imported the finest symphonic orchestras from Europe? Haven't I put all my funds into this temple of music?
Your funds and ours, too. And unless you start selling some tickets to these concerts, we'll all be broke.
Mr. Scott, as head of the Chicago College of Music and a reputable citizen, I assure you that I'll repay any loss, even if it takes me years.
I believe you, Dr. Ziegfeld. But why should there be a loss? Why can't we get people in here?
It seems the public prefers Little Egypt.
Then why don't we do what Little Egypt does?
Wiggles? Shakes with the hips?
No, no, no. Promotion, publicity, ballyhoo. She gets a story in the papers practically every day. That's what draws crowds.
Mr. Scott, even if I wished to do so, I wouldn't know how to sensationalize a symphony.
Then turn the job over to that son of yours.
Young Florence? But what could he do?
Maybe more than you think, Dr. Ziegfeld. I've been watching that young fellow. He's got ideas.
Ideas. Sometimes I don't even understand him. Like last week. I told him I was worried, and what did he do? Dashed off to New York without a word of explanation.
Then get him back here. Give him the job of a publicity man. And by George, I think...
Hello, Dad. How are you, Mr. Scott?
Florence.
Oh, Flo, we were just talking about you.
I thought you were in New York.
I was, but I've just got back with a man who's going to save your bankroll. Come in, Gene.
Yeah, hello.
Meet Eugene Sandow, the man with the greatest set of muscles in the world.
Muscles, acumen.
Yeah, hello.
He bends horseshoes with his bare hands. He tosses anvils around like teacups. I put him under contract, and I think...
Florence, are you crazy? How could you give him a contract without talking to me? You know very well.
Now, wait, Dr. Ziegfeld. Maybe Flo's got an idea here. Let's drop the symphonies and put on a show starring Sandow the Strong Man.
Never. I will have no part of it.
May I remind you, Dr. Ziegfeld, that I represent a majority of the stockholders? I say give him Sandow.
Then I take my name off this place. From now on, it's under the direction of Florence Ziegfeld, Jr. I'm going home. Good day.
Yeah, goodbye.
All right, Flo, get the ballyhoo started.
Mr. Thompson, I want to buy a full page in your paper. Up at the top, put C. Sandow, the Strong Man. This is Mrs. Butler Ponington, the society leader. I've brought her here to feel your muscles.
Oh, delighted.
Yeah, hello.
You are photographers all set? All right, Mrs. Butler Ponington. Now, feel his biceps.
Oh, my. They're hard as a washboard. Not that I ever felt a washboard, of course.
All right, boys, get the pictures to the papers. Now, Gene, this is the horse I want you to lift.
Yeah. Hello.
The photographers are all ready. Lift the horse.
Yeah, I get under. I...
Okay, boys, shoot it. All right, Gene. You can put the horse down now.
Yeah. Sit down, horse.
Folks, don't crowd, don't crowd. Sandow's show is going on all the time. You'll all have a chance to see him. Just have your ready money and stay in line.
Well, Dad, how do you feel about Sandow now?
Florence, I admit he saved our investment, but why? Why does the public want muscles instead of music?
You know, Dad, I think I could make them want music, too, if I used my recipe.
Recipe?
Yes, Dad. One-third glamour, one-third merit, and one-third advertising. Come on, let's count up tonight's take.
Yes, sir, there's no business like show business, and that was Flo Ziegfeld's start. And from the beginning of that magic formula, it worked as well with Folly's Beauties as it did with Sandow's biceps. So I guess it was quite a while, wasn't it, Billy, before he really began to glorify the American girl?
Yes, and isn't it strange, George? That began with a girl who wasn't American at all, but French.
I remember the story, Billy. It was a couple of years after the fair. And Ziggy had taken his share of the profits and gone on a grand tour of Europe. Paris, Berlin, and the Riviera.
And don't forget Monte Carlo.
Oh, I guess Ziggy never forgot Monte Carlo either, after what those roulette tables did to him. I heard that he barely had enough left to pay his fare back to England.
Yes, but Flo loves show business even more than gambling. So when he got to London, he spent his last shilling on a theater ticket.
In the northeast corner of my face, and the northwest corner of the selfsame place.
This is the Palace Music Hall in the year 1895. Flo Ziegfeld watches a young girl who has just come onto the stage with a voice that is filled with the witchery of Paris.
For I just can't make my eyes behave to that brown eyes. I am their slave. My lips may say, run away from me, but my eyes say, come and play with me. And you won't blame me. Cause I just can't make my eyes behave.
Excuse me, please, sorry. Oh, Usher, how can I get backstage?
Oh, but, Monsieur Ziegfeld, this is all such a surprise to me.
Oh, believe me, it's a surprise to me, too. But when I heard you singing out there a few minutes ago, it hit me, just like that.
Something hit you?
Yes, this idea. I can take you to New York, build a show around you, and make you into a great star.
But how can I be sure you have the money to make this show?
Money? Ho, ho, ho. You ever hear of Diamond Jim Brady?
The American millionaire? Oh, mais oui.
Well, Jim and I are like that. I'll cable him tonight, and I'll have the money in the morning.
So, this is the truth?
Cross my heart.
All right. Then I will sign this agreement you have written out. Now, where do I put my name?
Right down there at the bottom.
Oui. Ah, so, there you are in, how you say, white and black. Signed, Anna Held.
Mark my words, Anna. That's going to be a famous name. Now, if I can find somebody to loan me a little money, I'll take you out to dinner.
Oh, what magic distillers of names like Anna Held and Diamond Jim Brady. Tell me, Billy, did Diamond Jim really go down to a cellar and get a bucket full of money and cable it to Flo?
Well, of course, George. Flo always had good friends who were glad to finance his shows. It wasn't always a chance of a profit. It was because they enjoyed being a part of his spectacular operations.
And how spectacular. I remember that wonderful story of how he publicized Anna Held in her first show, A Parlor Match. This happened more than 50 years ago, but it's still a classic of Ballyhoo. It started in a small claims court.
Court will come to order. First case, Manhattan Milk Company against one Anna Held. Parties present?
I represent Miss Held, Your Honor.
My name's Ziegfeld.
I'm the manager of the Manhattan Milk Company, Your Honor.
Very well. We'll dispense with the formalities and settle this quickly. Just what is the issue here?
Well, Your Honor, for the past month, we've been delivering 2 cans of milk a day to Miss Held at the Hotel Marlborough.
Two cans? 10 gallons a day?
Yes, Your Honor. In the last month, we've delivered more than 300 gallons. And now she's refusing to pay.
Well, there's one point that's not quite clear to the court. Just how could this Miss Held drink 300 gallons of milk in a month?
Your Honor.
Yes, Mr. Ziegfeld.
Miss Held doesn't drink the milk.
Doesn't drink it?
No, she bathes in it.
Oh, I see. She does what?
Bathes.
Bathes?
You know, puts it in a tub and gets in.
In the milk? You mean complete? All over?
Well, it's her beauty secret, Your Honor. A daily bath in fresh milk.
Well, I have never heard of anything like this in all my years on the bench.
Excuse me, Mr. Ziegfeld. I'm Jones from the Tribune. Say, could you tell me more about this milk bath?
Why, delighted, Mr. Jones. Come on, you can get the story directly from Miss Hell.
Just a minute. What about this case?
Oh, forget it, Your Honor. I'll pay the milk bill. All right, come on, Mr. Jones.
Wait, wait. The court's coming with you.
Get your papers, read all about it. Actually, sue the bathtub full of milk.
Oh, milkman, leave a little extra this morning. About 30 gallons?
Sorry, sir, we're sold out for tonight's performance. Best I can do is 3 weeks from today. Yes, sir, party of six, third row, sir.
Well, Anna, what do you think of milk baths now?
Oh, poo! All that milk you send, I pour him down the drain.
I'll keep it up, Anna. We're being sued by another dairy tomorrow. One-third glamour, one-third merit, one-third advertising.
And one-third milk.
Yes, there's no business like show business. Tell me, Billy, confidentially, between you and me and Zanuck, did you ever take one of those milk baths?
Oh, don't be silly, George. I never fall for such a ridiculous idea. Besides, milk doesn't make you beautiful. It just makes you feel sticky.
Yeah, it kind of makes you feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you never took a milk bath, how do you know?
I was told by a close personal friend.
By name, Billy Burke.
Besides, George, at the time Anna Held was getting all that milk bath publicity, I wasn't even in this country. I was barely getting started in show business over in England, and I never even heard of Flo Ziegfeld.
Ah, but a lot of other people had by that time, Billy. His marriage to Anna Held was a front-page story, and so were all the shows that he starred her in. And then in the summer of 1907, he really made news. He presented the first Ziegfeld Follies on the roof of the New York Theater, with Emma Carris and Grace LaRue and Bickle and Watson and 50 Anna Held girls, and the critics gave it raves, and he was really on his way.
Isn't it strange, George? On Labor Day of that year, Flo moved his first Follies to the Liberty Theater on 42nd near Broadway. And the very same evening, I made my American debut at the Empire Theater with John Drew down at 40th Street.
My, just a couple of blocks away.
That's all. And still, we didn't even meet for 7 years.
7 years filled with wonder and excitement. And each year, new Ziegfeld Follies. And each folly is bigger and better and more brilliant. And Ziegfeld and Anna Held are divorced. But other beautiful girls take the spotlight in his shows, paving the way for such glorious names as Ann Pennington, Mae Murray, and Ina Clare. Then he starts building great comedians into his shows, working towards such immortals as Eddie Cantor, Burt Williams, W.C. Fields, Fanny Price, Jack Donahue, Leon Errol. And then he begins creating the beautiful stage effects no one has ever surpassed. Lavish costumes, spectacular color settings that sometimes cost many thousands for just one short single scene. To it all, through the long months of preparation and rehearsal for every show, to the auditions and the tryouts and the clashes of temperament, Ziggy watches with a strange, calm detachment. He makes every decision, he knows every note, every step, every stitch of the costumes, and yet he looks at it through half-closed eyes, a man with a beautiful dream.
A man with a beautiful dream. You know, George, that's the way Flo looked when I first met him.
That was in 1914, wasn't it, Billy?
Yes, on New Year's Eve. Somerset Maugham took me and a little party to a costume ball at the Astor. As we came down the grand staircase to the ballroom, I saw a tall, slim man in immaculate evening clothes. He was dark, removed, distinguished. I saw him glance at me as we passed, and I went out onto the dance floor. The orchestra was playing a Paul Jones. And if you remember, that's something like a square dance, where you're continually changing partners, you know. Presently, I found I was dancing with this handsome stranger, and getting quite a thrill out of it, too. He didn't say a word that I remember. He merely looked at me, and there I was, falling hopelessly in love.
And so, Billy, you and Flo Ziegfeld got married, huh?
Well, George, it wasn't as fast and simple as that. In the first place, my manager, the great Charles Frohman, was furious when he found out I was going around with a rival producer. He absolutely, positively forbade me to see Flo at any time, anywhere.
So naturally, you absolutely, positively saw him anytime, anywhere. And then you got married.
Oh, no, George. I tried to see Flo, but it always seemed as if the only way I could do it was by peeking around Mr. Frohman. It finally got so difficult that the only means we had of getting a word together was to meet in Grant's tomb.
Oh, what a beautiful spot for a rendezvous. Just you and Flo and General Grant. Well, I bet that Grant knew enough to keep his mouth shut. Huh? I can see it all, Billy. Amid those romantic surroundings, Flo proposed and you got married.
Oh, no, George, no. Amid those romantic surroundings, Flo and I had a violent quarrel. We both parted mad. I returned his gifts and he was so angry he wouldn't even phone me. I vowed I'd never see him again.
And then?
Then we got married.
Well, I knew it happened. Well, it's about time, Billy. Seriously, honey, tell me something. Now, this is a pretty personal question. If you had to do it over again, would you marry Flo?
I'm afraid I would, George.
Afraid?
Yes, George. I'd be afraid at having to repeat some of the stormy times we had in our 18 years. But, well, I'd have to do it because, you see, I loved Flo. And he loved me.
Yes, I know.
Maybe there were other women in his life, but I can understand the reason. Flo was drawn to beauty of all kinds. Beautiful music, beautiful stage effects, beautiful girls.
Honey, he wouldn't have been a great producer if he hadn't had that love of beauty, I know.
And although there were times when I suffered from jealousy, I can look back now and know he really loved me very deeply. I know it by a thousand little things a woman keeps down in her heart. His tender words, his fabulous, foolish gifts, and my memories of the day he came to me with tears in his eyes when his last show had failed and he felt that he was through. Yes, George, Flo loved me, and that knowledge is the most precious thing I'll ever have.
A pretty girl is like a melody that haunts you night and day, just like the strain of a haunting refrain. She'll start upon a marathon and run around your brain.
Remember how John Steele sang that in The Follies of 1919,
oh,
Billy?
I'll never forget. That was the most glorious Follies Flo ever produced.
Well, just think of that cast, Billy. If only you could duplicate it today. Eddie Cantor, Eddie Dowling, Ray and Johnny Dooley, yes. Will Rogers, Bert Williams.
Van and Skang, Marilyn Miller, Ann Pennington, George Lemaire.
And the music. Remember the song that Eddie Cantor sang, Billy? That's the kind of a baby for me. She's got a dog and cat, a great big picture hat, and all the boys just call her baby. She's got a daddy smile and such a baby smile, the kind that makes you want to stick around a while. She's got those creamy eyes, and every time she sighs, you forget your family. The other evening in the cabaret we spent, and when I saw the check, I thought it was the rent. But when the waiter came, she simply signed her name. That's the kind of a baby for me.
George. And there was somebody else in that Follies I'll never forget, George. I know you'll remember him, too. That cowboy with the bashful grin and the wad of gum.
Yeah, Billy. The fellow who said he never met a man he couldn't like, Will Rogers.
You know, down home there to Claremore, Oklahoma, we don't put on so much dog as you city folks. Now you take the first time I met up with Mr. Ziegfeld. He says, "Will, come out and have supper with me." And I says, "Thanks, but I just ate.
Mr. Ziegfeld, he says, around here we say, I've just eaten. Well, I don't know. You know, we got folks down to Claremore, too, that says, I've just eaten, but lately they ain't et.
Do you remember those songs Bert Williams used to sing?
Bert Williams, say, there was one of the greatest entertainers of all time. Let me see if I can recall how he used to sing Nobody. I ain't never done nothing to nobody. Mm-mm. And I ain't never got nothing from nobody. No time. And until that I get something from somebody, sometime, I don't intend to do nothing for nobody. No time. Not a soul.
Somebody else in the Follies of 1990, I'll never forget, George. The juggler with the big red nose.
Yes, Billy, nobody will ever forget W.C. Fields. I can just see him up there on the stage with that gruff voice of his grumbling over the footlights.
Well, you'll have to pardon me for dropping things tonight. Seem to be hanging over, yes, indeed. Let's see, where are my Indian clubs? What do I want Indian clubs for? I don't want to club an Indian. Boy, my head, man out there just asked, could he fix me a bromo seltzer? Gad, bromo seltzer, I couldn't stand the noise.
And there was still another wonderful thing in that edition of the Follies, Billy. Remember the song?
Oh, how I'd love to hear that again.
Well, honey, tonight you're going to get your wish. Mandy, there's a minister handy, and it sure would be dandy if we'd let him make a fee. So don't you linger, here's a ring for your finger, isn't it a humdinger? Come along and let the wedding chimes bring happy times for Mandy and me all. Mandy, there's a minister handy, and it's gonna be dandy fall if we let her make a beat. Honey girl, don't you linger, here's a ring for your finger, and isn't it a humdinger? Wedding time, bring happy time for Mandy. Well, that's a bit of one of the Follies. A bit of the story of the dreamer and his magic formula. One-third glamour, one-third merit, one-third advertising. But of the creative genius that gave the world not only the Follies, but such stage masterpieces as Rio Rita, Sally, Showboat, and so many others. My friend Florence Ziegfeld has gone on long ago. But oh, he left a legacy to the world and to show business that will remain as long as there are people to understand the language of beauty and music and laughter. And we who knew him and loved him can only echo the words that Will Rogers wrote when Ziggy passed on.
Goodbye, Flo. Save a spot for me. You put on a show up there someday that'll knock their eye out.
And that will be show business. Thanks for dropping in on our first show, Billy.
Oh, thanks for having me, George. I'll be listening next week.
Do that. We'll be telling the story of Bing Crosby. And in succeeding weeks, we'll be presenting such show business stories as Up Allen's Alley, The Birth of a Song, and the backstage tale of Tales of the South Pacific.
Good night, George.
Good night, sweet Billy.